This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch. Coming up, House Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives held a hearing today on the pricing of fetal tissue. Three former prosecutors say the evidence suggests that crimes were committed. Chairperson of the investigative panel, Tennessee Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, is here a little bit later with the details. And the state of Utah has declared a public health crisis, and the left isn't happy. Utah State Senator Todd Weiler joins me to explain. Also, we'll continue our conversation on the RNC delegate process a little later here on Washington Watch. You won't want to miss that. The website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's guest, our topics. You can also sign up for my daily update. And legislative alerts keeps you informed as to what's happening when it comes to faith, family, and freedom, and what you can do to be involved. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me. At T. Perkins. All right, if you're new, jot down this number because this is where we're going to have our conversation a little bit later. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, a little bit later when we open up the phone lines. All right, today, the House Select Panel on Infant Lives held a hearing examining the pricing of aborted baby parts. Now, this is the select investigative panel that was put together by the House leadership in response to the disturbing revelations that came about as a result of the undercover Center for Medical Progress videos into Planned Parenthood. Now, those occurred last year. There's about a dozen of them. Well, today's hearing made clear that the middlemen in this tissue procurement business and the abortion clinics are profiting off the sale of aborted baby parts, which is against the law. Now, today's hearing also revealed that the problem is actually larger and more widespread than we originally thought. Joining us now is the chairperson of the House Select Panel on Infant Lives, Tennessee Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn. Congresswoman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
I am pleased to be with you. Thank you for having me, and thank you for the interest and the attention paid to the hearing that we had today. You're right. It was a fairly revealing hearing.
Well, I'm going to ask you that, Marsha. What was the most revealing new piece of information that came out as a result of today's hearing?
One of the things that was a little bit surprising to us. We got to the end of the hearing, and there'd been a lot of discussion and back and forth. And, of course, our colleagues on the left are always trying to find some way to discredit documents and videos and shut the hearing down. But, Tony, at the end, I asked all the witnesses what they felt like we needed to do after hearing all the discussion today and being with us for several hours. What would they do? And it was interesting. The Democrat witness, the first one, said, well, I would subpoena STEM Express, which, of course, we've already done. And STEM Express is one of the procurement organizations. And they felt like looking at the financial documents. And see, we were hearing this from Democrats and Republicans. So it was encouraging to get that agreement from our witnesses. I do believe that it puts us on a firmer footing as we move forward to find out, get to the bottom of what is going on with this procurement industry and to understand how in the world this could have grown up so quickly and there be such enormous profits that are reporting being made in the sale of this fetal tissue in the baby body part.
Marsha, I think your opening statement was very important in that you made very clear for the public that the actions taken by this panel in investigating this is not based upon some law that was just changed or enacted by the current majority, but this goes back to 1993 when the Democrats were in the majority. And it was outlawed, this sale of baby body parts for profit, in the National Institute of Health Revitalization Act which was done by former Congressman Henry Waxman. So this is not something that the Republicans have cooked up. This was the law that's been there for over 20 years.
You're exactly right. And our Democrat colleagues today would say, look, we discussed this issue 16 years ago. We don't need to revisit it. Well, Tony, how many laws do you know don't need to be revisited every few years? And, of course, it needed to be revisited because until recently, until 2010, you really did not have these procurement businesses popping up. And when we originally started this, we thought maybe there were three procurement businesses. We're finding out now there probably are over 20 that are operating in this country. So, of course, we need to look at it to make a determination if the law is being broken and to find out what they're selling and how they're selling and how they're making a profit. You know, I think it's important to realize you cannot sell human beings and human body parts in the United States. It is illegal. And you cannot make a profit. That is why when you sign your driver's license for your organs to be donated at your death, you are signing with a tissue donation bank. And it is not something that can be sold or a profit made on the sale of these baby body parts.
And that the rationale for that should be quite evident, but explain to our listeners why that is the case, why we don't allow body parts or any aspect of a human being to be sold for a profit.
Yeah, and, you know, you might look at just the one component of, let's say, someone who's on a wait list for a transplant, organ transplant, and they disallow any selling or exchange of money or profit for that because they do not want individuals to begin that business of selling those parts. The tissue and organ donation bank and the networks that handle that make certain that there is no exchange of money, that if you're paying for transportation, you're allowed to do that. You can pay for implantation, but there cannot be a profit associated with the sale of human body parts. It is clearly illegal. And today, U.S. Code 43, Section 289, G2 is the portion of the code that we referenced and worked from as we talked about the illegality of the profit mechanism into this donation industry.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us today. My guest is Tennessee Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn. She is the chairperson of the investigative panel that held hearings today looking into infant lives, and today in particular the pricing of fetal tissue. Still to come, we're going to be talking about Utah declaring a public health crisis, which has the left up in arms. We're going to talk about that with a Utah state senator. But I want to return to this conversation with Marsha. Marsha, one of your colleagues on the panel, one of the Democratic members, and we were just talking about how this was a law enacted by the Democratic majority in Congress back in 1993. Jackie Speier tweeted on her Twitter account, quote, "Perhaps we should get a new name, the Select Panel on Stopping Research and Letting People Die." The callousness of her tweet is only exceeded by what we saw on videos from the undercover Planned Parenthood investigation.
Well, Tony, you're right on that, because what we want to do is make certain that legal medical research is able to continue. We all want to see cures found for debilitating diseases. We're all committed to that. What we do know from talking to researchers is that no, they don't need fresh fetal tissue. And many researchers, even those that use cord blood or tissue from miscarriages, they will tell you we don't need lots of fresh fetal tissue. So there should not be, ought not to be, any reason for the abortion clinics to be in the business of selling these body parts. And what is so astounding, the procurement organization, that we had some of the documents from them today, this morning we went to their website, and we still, to this day, could pull down the screen that allows an individual to go in there just like they're shopping on Amazon or Overstock or one of those websites, and they can enter the type of tissue they want. They can enter that they want fetal tissue. They can enter the gestation and age of the unborn baby. They can enter if they want hearts or livers or brains or scalps or arms or legs or whatever organ they're wanting. Now, I want you to think about that. You can go onto this website. You can click on what you want, and at the age of gestation of that unborn baby, and then you can move over to checkout, and you can make your payment, select your shipping method, and I mean, even sounds, the day of the week.
It sounds like Amazon for body parts.
Available for your use. All of that is there in a business format online. And, of course, if Congress thinks there may be a violation of federal code, we're within our right to move forward and to investigate this. And, today's hearing was a very important part of that investigation.
And you had three former prosecutors that testified.
We had three former U.S. attorneys who came before us. Because one of the questions we needed to ask is, look, you're looking at the evidence that we have. Should we move forward with this investigation? And what questions should we be asking of those that we are investigating? Where do you think that we should move with this? And we, as I said, we received a good bit of encouragement, and the prosecutors did a superb job. So,
and their summary was that there's enough evidence here to proceed with next steps.
That is correct. They felt that there was enough evidence from what we had been able so far to acquire. There was enough evidence to move forward with this.
So next steps are?
We will continue to look at the money trail. And we will continue to look at the relationship between what is going on with the abortion clinics, with these procurement organizations, the business relationship between those two, and the business relationship between the individuals that are the customers of or the entities that are using the tissue.
All right. Well, we'll continue to track this as well.
Yeah, and your listeners can stay up with us. We're on Facebook and on Twitter, and, of course, we have our website. They can follow along.
All right. Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, thanks so much for your leadership on this
and for
joining us this afternoon. All right, folks, you can find out more by going to TonyPerkins.com. You can follow links over to Marsha Blackburn's website, and I do want to encourage you to stay up on this important information. And there's a reason why there are a lot more of these procurement operations out there, and it's explained by profit. It's free markets when you allow body parts to be bought and sold. All right, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch. Utah declaring a state of a public health crisis. We're going to talk about it. Don't go away.
Do you enjoy history, museums, pandas, and national monuments? And are you looking to gain work experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If the answer is yes, come spend a semester as an intern in Washington, D.C. with a Family Research Council. You will get a chance to experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and attend congressional hearings, events, rallies, and lectures all over D.C. Further, you will develop your skills in research and writing about the sanctity of life, marriage and family, religious liberty, and many other policy issues. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. To learn more and apply to the program, visit frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
As Christians, we occasionally need to retreat from the culture war for a time of renewal. The American Family Association invites you to retreat with us to the mountains of North Carolina, October 3rd through 6th, for the annual AFA Retreat at the Cove. Speakers at this year's event will include AFA President Tim Wildman, Governmental Affairs Director Sandy Rios, Messianic Jewish Apologist Dr. Michael Brown, Marquis Laughlin, founder of Acts of the Word Ministries, and more. As in years past, we'll gather at the Billy Graham Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina. Capacity is limited to 400 participants, so make your plans to attend soon. Get more information at afafoundation.net. Register by calling 800-950-2092, option 2, followed by option 1. It's the annual Retreat at the Cove, October 3rd through 6th, in the beautiful Smoky Mountains of North Carolina.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at T Perkins. Let me encourage you, if you're not yet signed up for my daily update, you could do so at the website, TonyPerkins.com. And you can also, you need to know this program comes to you because of our partners across the country. And you can become one of those partners and financially stand with us as we bring you information as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. To find out more about that, go to TonyPerkins.com or just email me, Tony@TonyPerkins.com. All right, a lot of discussion as of late about the spiritual, the physical, and emotional harms of pornography. You know, last couple of weeks, we've had Josh McDowell on a couple of times discussing a groundbreaking research by the Barna Group into the prevalence of porn, in particular in the church, and the need for the church to now take action and do something. Well, there is one state now that is actually taking action, declaring pornography a public health crisis. Yesterday, Utah Governor Gary Herbert signed a resolution declaring pornography to be a public health crisis in the state of Utah. Now, the resolution was sponsored by Utah State Senator Todd Weiler, who joins us now to discuss what Utah is doing and why. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Let me give you the opportunity first to say, to tell us why the resolution calling this a crisis, health care crisis, or a health crisis.
Well, you know, it's for, you know, I'm a lawyer, and for decades now, when you talk to people about how we're going to, what we're going to do about porn and how we're going to protect children from pornography, you know, the typical response is they shrug their shoulders and say, well, it's legal. Well, that's true to an extent. Obscene material is not legal, and it's hard to draw those distinctions, as the Supreme Court found out. But this this public health is basically a new angle to combat pornography. And if you'll remember, you know, 40 years ago when I was a kid, you could buy cigarettes in a vending machine. You could put in two or three quarters and pull a knob and buy cigarettes. And once we as a country adopted the concept that tobacco was both addictive and harmful, those vending machines disappeared. And now you have to go to 7-Eleven or somewhere, show an ID, and prove you're a certain age. We need to do that with pornography. We need to make it less accessible to children. And that's what this resolution is designed to start doing.
And the science is there. Now, I mean, just, I guess, 2 weeks ago, Time magazine had a cover story on the issue of porn and how it affects men physiologically, affects their relationships. There's a lot more research going into how this literally affects the brain. And so it's right to say this is a health issue because the evidence is there.
Does in the Time magazine, I was quoted in that article, and it literally does warp your brain, especially in those formative teenage years. You know, when you view pornography, it releases dopamine, which is a drug, and you can actually get high. And if you do that, compulsively over a long cycle of time, you will actually change your brain chemistry and change your brain wiring, especially in the reward centers.
Why is it, Senator, that the left only wants to use the science in some cases? Here, you've got the left screaming that this is a bunch of, Neanderthals, throwbacks, trying to operate on an antiquated system of morality, trying to silence people.
Yeah, you know, I can't really speak for the left, but I will tell you, it's fascinating to watch their response. Larry Flint came out today and said he's going to send all of my colleagues a free copy of Hustler magazine as a response to our resolution, which is, you know, I guess what you'd expect from Larry Flint. But, you know, the left wants to call this censorship, and we're not censoring anything. And I'd love to hear someone make the case as to why an 11-year-old boy, which is the average age of first exposure to hardcore pornography, why an 11-year-old boy would need to be watching three men, you know, on a woman and abusing her and spitting on her and doing a lot of worse things than that. We know now that 92% of all pornographic videos portray violence against women, according to some published research.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I was in the legislature in Louisiana, I passed legislation that required schools in all public facilities, libraries, to have filters on their internet to prohibit and their computers to prohibit kids having access to porn at these public sites. And, you know, I know that you're looking at this. What kind of steps will Utah take to try to protect kids in this age of internet when it's so accessible?
Well, thanks. I think we still have to decide that, but right now I'm pushing for voluntary compliance. So I have met with a representative for all of the McDonald's in Utah. McDonald's has free Wi-Fi, unfiltered Wi-Fi access in all of their locations. And I've had mothers in my Senate district call me and say, I've got filters at home. I've come to find out my teens at McDonald's with a tablet looking at porn. And I've said to McDonald's, you're a family restaurant. You market to children. Why would you want to be a purveyor of pornography? And I think they're going to change that. And I think we need to also look at the libraries, and I'm glad to hear that you did that. I think that's a bill we need to sponsor in Utah, because many of our libraries, the librarians will put their hands over their hearts and talk about the First Amendment, and yet if these libraries and if McDonald's was giving cigarettes to our children, we'd all be up in arms. We'd be picketing them. But somehow it's okay if they deliver pornography to them.
Yeah, not only that, but you know how we've had all this outrage over secondhand smoke. You don't even have to access the porn yourself to be sitting in the booth next to somebody or in the, at the table at the public library next to someone. And that was a testimony we had, that you had people that would be accessing it and kids would be walking by or families, and they would be exposed to it as well. So if it's a public facility, there's some sense that the public has a right not to be confronted with this.
Yeah, and that's what I think is often lost in the First Amendment discussion. Because someone may have the First Amendment right, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, to view pornography, but what about my First Amendment right to not view it? And, David Cameron in England, which is a country much more progressive than we are on issues of sexuality and nudity, David Cameron met with the Internet service providers in England 2 years ago and asked them to change the Internet to a default setting of no porn and to force the user to opt into porn. That's something I'd like to see the United States gravitate toward, and I've already talked to U.S. Senator Orrin Hatch about working with me on that.
Well, Senator Todd Weiler, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon, for your leadership on what I do believe is a public health crisis, and thanks for taking leadership on this.
Thank you. Thanks for all your good work.
All right, thank you. State Senator Todd Weiler in Utah. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, we're going to continue yesterday's conversation about the RNC rules. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, I know there's a lot of optimism in the markets, and I guess there should be since the Dow hit over 18,000. Everybody thinks this is just the beginning of a new upswing. By the way, that just shows us that we're a little overheated. As a matter of fact, the gains would indicate that we are poised for another recession. Not saying that's going to happen immediately, but nonetheless, we are about 19 times earnings. That's a little overheated for the markets. But the other news is housing. Again, we have another non-correlating number. You've got the stock market with an enormous amount of enthusiasm when one of the underlying fundamentals of the economy, one of the fundamentals that, in my opinion, is extremely important to a healthy, growing economy would be housing, of course. Now, this is the month of March. This is generally a pretty good start to the summer housing season, so to speak, and everybody was expecting good things coming out of some of the housing numbers. Now, it's okay to be off a little bit of what expectations are, but housing starts down 8.8%. And not only that, building permits touched on a 12-month low, down 7.7%. Of course, building permits indicating that housing starts in the future may not be so good. So housing starts down 8.8%. That is a significant gain, particularly since it would appear as though housing has been struggling all year long.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you'd like more information, visit the website. If you've got a question, comment, you can email me, Tony@TonyPerkins.com. All right, I want to hit another little bit on this declaration out of Utah. Because the left, as I mentioned, kind of, you know, their eyes rolling back in their head, foaming at the mouth. Normal stuff. But the Free Speech Coalition, which is an adult entertainment trade group, called Utah's declaration an old-fashioned morals bill that is driven by ignorance and bias. Really? Really? The science is becoming quite clear on the effects of pornography. But again, they only want science. They only want junk science when it comes to, like, global warming. But, you know, when it comes to biology, anatomy, all of those things, they deny science. Continuing from the Free Speech Coalition, the true public health crisis are socially conservative politicians like these who have fought adequate science-based sexual health education for over 35 years. Really? It's your sex training programs that have led to what the CDC says near pandemic rates of sexually transmitted diseases. That's a part of your pornography expansion. Look, the evidence is overwhelming, and this is, you know, as Senator Weiler pointed out, they're just acting in good faith and responsibly to protect children from this. Why would anyone, I mean, think about that from a, why would anyone not want to protect children from pornography and its effects? Even if the science was inconclusive on the effects, there's a growing body of science that shows that this does have a profound effect, and you can actually just anecdotally look at that as well. Why would anyone defend the right to expose children to this? Good question. All right, I want to pick up where we were yesterday. Very end of the program, we got a call. And by the way, we're going to have calls here in the next segment. But we got a call at the very end of the program about whether or not this Rule 40B that has been in the press so much with the RNC and the upcoming convention in Cleveland in July, whether or not that would prohibit Marco Rubio or someone else from receiving the votes of their delegates. All right. Now, I do have a video on my website that it's an RNC explaining a little bit about the convention and how it works. If you'd like more information, it's like 3 minutes long. You can go to tonyperkins.com and watch it. But here's how the convention works. The 40B rule that was adopted in 2012 at the last convention was a temporary rule. Every convention has its own rules that they operate by. Now, there are some permanent rules that govern the Republican Party, but every convention, they have a rules committee that meets, and this was adopted. Now, it was very contentious, and it was adopted, many say, and I believe to be true, it was adopted to try to keep Ron Paul from being nominated or getting votes on the convention floor, because he did not have eight states. And that's what this requires. It requires that a candidate win the majority of delegates in at least eight individual states in order to have his or her name placed on the nominating ballot at the Republican National Convention. Now, there is an effort going into this convention so as not to allow anyone to say anything, is to try to keep the rules as they are. But again, understand this was a temporary rule. The next rules committee that is seated in July in Cleveland prior to the start of the general convention will have to adopt rules. This is not a standing rule. Now, if this rule were in place, would Marco Rubio receive his delegates? There is some debate over that. Some say, yes, he would get those based upon what the state says. If the state says those delegates are bound to Marco Rubio, and I'm just using him as an example, it could be somebody else, but if it's Marco Rubio, because there's only a couple more that had delegates, they would be bound to him if the state said so, if state rules. If they were bound, they would cast their vote for Marco Rubio. However, he would not be able to take advantage of those because he would not have the eight states. All right. That's the best explanation. This is the problem when they adopt these rules kind of in haste. They don't think through the whole thing. And this was, it really was. It was intended to try to, you know, cut Ron Paul off at the pass. And although Romney had the requisite number, the 1237, going into the convention, so he was the presumptive nominee. But they wanted to force this to make sure it appeared as if there was unity on the floor of the convention, which there was not. Okay, I hope that explains that. That was our discussion yesterday. When we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines, 866-372-7234. And here's the question I have for you today. All right, get ready. You ready? Here's my question. I want to know, do you agree with the state of Utah that the accessibility, the growing accessibility of pornography and its effects has led to a public health crisis? What do you think? I want to hear from you. When we return here on Washington Watch, again, the number 866-372-7234. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T. Perkins. All right, folks, don't go away because we're coming back with your phone calls here on Washington Watch right after this.
God who gave us life gave us liberty. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman. Do you know who said that? That was Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, Mr. Secularist, Mr. Separation of Church and State, you've heard so much about. Well, he's the one who said, God who gave us life gave us liberty. We're going to be going to the Jefferson Memorial when we go on our spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon in June and September. Now, June's about full. We have some seats left in September. We'll see all of our nation's capital from a distinctively Christian perspective with Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation leading us around the city. We're also going to be going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown if you'd like to take that tour with us as well. The tours are back-to-back You can go on one or both of the tours with us. We'd really like to have you join us. For all the information, go to spiritualheritagetours.com, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy full-time around the world. They're now taking applications and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022. 337-433-5022.
You slip away for a weekend of relaxation, but wake up to find yesterday's scratchy throat feels like a fiery furnace. Your weekend could be up in flames, but for MD Live, 24/7 access to board-certified physicians anywhere. MD Live is used by major corporations and the American Family Association to augment employee health care benefits. Information to determine whether MD Live makes sense for you is available at hcbenefits.com. hcbenefits.com.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
Would you make one of the most important phone calls that you can make as far as your economic, your financial stewardship? I believe that permanent income is incredibly important to us, especially when you're retired. Listen, one thing we know for certain, the consumption of goods and your cost are never going to change. Make sure that you protect your income. Social Security, you will likely have maybe a pension. Add to permanent income with a charitable gift annuity and do the Lord's work. There's no better organization to do it with than the AFA Foundation, and no better time in our economy than right now.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right. 866-372-7234. The phone lines are lighting up. And here's the question. Do you agree with Utah that the growing accessibility and effects of pornography is, in fact, a public health crisis? I want to know what you think today as we start in Nebraska with Jesse. Jesse, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me.
What do you think?
I think pornography is a tool of the devil used to destroy marriages, the mind of young men and women, and even older folks for that matter. I just think it's an evil industry all the way around, Tony, and I agree with Utah 100%.
So you would you support officials in Nebraska doing something similar?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's something that's way too easily accessible for young people, and it sometimes comes up when you're not even trying to look at stuff like that. So you really have to watch when your children are on the computer, and it's just a horrible thing.
Yeah, it's pernicious, and they troll, they prey, and they try to draw people in. You're right. You're not even looking for it, and it pops up. Jesse, thanks so much for listening and calling in today. 866-372-7234, and we're going to go to Arkansas where David is on the line. David, you agree with the folks in Utah?
I certainly do, Tony, and more than that, I think it's a moral health crisis more than anything, or adds to the moral health crisis we got in the United States. And to answer your question you had earlier about why would anybody want to not protect children and everything, just follow the money, bud. Follow the money.
You know, that's a really good point, David. The amount of money that is found in or made in pornography is unbelievable. I mean, it is a huge, huge industry, in the amount of money. I mean, it exceeds everything made in professional sports. I mean, it's unbelievable the amount of money that is involved in pornography. Now, that means a lot of people are accessing it, paying for it, But that's why they want to entrap young people in it, because those are future customers. And they don't want to cut off the supply, and they don't want to go back to where there was stigma attached to it, which there should be. You know, used to, you know, you had to go into a certain seedy part of town to find this kind of stuff, and you know, people would be looking over their shoulder thinking someone might recognize them. Well, now any smartphone, computer, and you know, as Jesse pointed out, I mean, you don't even have to be looking for it. It'll pop up on your computer, and inquisitive kids, curious. Look, I you know, look, kids are curious, and they're going to explore. And we've got to put the proper safeguards in place. And part of that is parents making sure you're watching what your kids watch. I mean, I'll tell you, in our home, kids do not have computers in the room, in their bedrooms. They don't have TVs in there. We want to see what, you know, if they're going to watch something, it's going to be in plain view of everybody in the house. But, you know, again, with smartphones and computers, going to these public facilities, even libraries, like we have a duty to protect our children from being ambushed with this, so that the profiteers of this porn cannot, you know, keep the pipeline of addicts, you know, flowing. All right, David, thanks so much for the call. All right, we're going to talk to another David, this time in Virginia. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I totally agree with what they're doing out there, and I would love to see it being done here in Virginia as well. And I couldn't help but think when you were talking about that, how porn affects, of course, everybody, and even if just the husband or a boyfriend is into it, how that affects his relationship with all the other relationships he has, including children around him. But I couldn't help but think about how the left always uses this kind of thing and the correlation between this and them wanting to have adult males walk in the restrooms with little girls and women. And mm-hmm. how, you know, they will be up in arms about making laws to keep guns out of locations, and we don't want guns in places because of public safety. But they don't consider public safety at all when it comes to sexuality. I just can't understand it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I in my update yesterday, I wrote that in the final paragraph talking about what's happening in North Carolina and the hypocrisy of the left on this, in particular the hypocrisy of President Barack Hussein Obama. And that, first off, he's bashing North Carolina for their public safety bill that prohibits the government from forcing businesses and others to open up their restrooms to anyone. But yet he could do the same thing on federal property. All of the federal parks, you know, he could declare that, you know, anybody could use the restrooms. Why won't he do that? Well, I suggest you he wouldn't do it because there's so many families that go to these federal parks. They would be up in arms going into an election, which would not bode well for the left. But here's another thing. And this was the point I made yesterday in the update, was why is the TSA so bigoted that they only give you two choices of gender? I mean, you have to. You cannot get a ticket. You cannot get on an airplane unless you declare your gender as a male or female. Why is that? It's a security issue. Well, how about that? Again, I mean, it's frustrating, the hypocrisy of the left and how blatant it is and how the media refuses to call them out for it. David, thanks so much for listening and calling. And I'm with you. I'd like to see other states take the same route as Utah has and say, hey, this is a public health crisis, and we need to look at it and see what we can do to protect children. States have an obligation to do that. And again, it doesn't do it. I mean, they just say we're going to start looking into it to see what we can do. And I hope they take some concrete steps as a result of it. All right, we're going to get to a couple more phone calls here before we run out of time. And we're going to go to Louisiana, where Tim is on the line. Tim, welcome to Washington Watch.
How's it going, Tony? Appreciate you taking my call.
Absolutely. Do you agree with those folks?
Well, honestly, Tony, I haven't caught wind of exactly what Utah's doing, but anything that pulls back the reins on the so-called adult entertainment industry, I think is a great idea. I myself spent 12, 13 years addicted to pornography. It's been just about almost a year now since I've viewed that, and I can attest personally for the damage it does to your relationships with your wife, your family. It's a battle every day for me still on how I view women, not as objects, but as children of God.
Can I ask you a couple questions there, Tim?
Yes, sir.
When were you first exposed to pornography?
Roughly about 12 years old, sir. And I'm 28 now. I'll be 28 this summer, so 27 now.
Now, how significant was the computer and the internet and that in feeding and
that's
fueling your addiction?
That's how it started. And that's how I had the smartphone and everything like that, so it was at the tip of my fingers anytime. And, once I started to try to get a hold on it by getting rid of the smartphone, I still found other means, but that's where it started, and that's what I mean. And throughout those years when I wasn't saved, it really had a time to really dig in and get its grips on my life. And I just heard earlier today on a small segment that talked about they gave two different statistics. One was for the month of February, and one was for the whole year, 2015. They said 500,000 years worth of pornography was viewed. And if that was even just for the last year, that's 83 times the lifespan of Earth, if it was indeed 6,000 years, roughly, considering creation. That is astronomical.
Do you have in place now, like Covenant Eyes, those that try to help you deal with the challenges that you continue to face?
I do keep myself accountable both to my wife and to a fellow, a leader in our church. My phone, I do not have any access to the internet at all. I've blocked even getting picture messages from any individual except for a few trusted individuals that I have. When it comes to the internet, I honestly don't trust myself, so I wouldn't even begin to trust my children with their future with that. So when it comes to the internet in our home, my wife has a password to the computer. If I need her to get onto something for me and check it out, I'll have her pull it up, check it out. Make sure there's no even ads on the side. And that's how serious I think that us as men of the cross need to handle our purity.
Well, Tim, thanks so much for calling and candidly sharing, because I think you're absolutely right. And I know some people would say, well, that's pretty radical that you would block, pictures on your phone. I mean, you're an adult. Why would you do that? Well, as a Christian. And I'm only speaking to believers, okay? The rest of you, I hope that you would want to overcome this addiction, which really does rob you of the joy of intimacy. But for Christians, Jesus said, if your eye offends you, pluck it out. For it'd be better for you to enter the kingdom of God with one eye than having two and be cast into the hell fire. I mean, that sounds pretty radical when Jesus was saying that, but this is what he's saying. Sometimes we need to take some radical steps to keep ourselves from being led down the wrong path. And if that means you get rid of the computer out of your home, so be it. You would rather be free from the bondage that comes with this addiction then, have the computer, have access to it, and struggle with it day in and day out and be deprived of the fullness of the relationship that you can have with others. And that was really the focal point of the Time magazine piece a couple of weeks ago. It was not a Christian perspective. It was just men who said they have been totally effective affected and robbed of their ability to be intimate with their spouse or female because of the addiction to porn and the effect that it's had on them. It's better to get rid of it if you have that problem. And there are, as I mentioned, Covenant Eyes. There are a couple of good online programs that you can do to make you, to hold yourself accountable to someone else. But again, we go back to what Josh McDowell shared with us a couple of weeks ago. This is prevalent in the church. And this is, I was talking to Josh about this. This is why I think there is apparent apathy within the church about the redefinition of marriage and this sexual chaos that is covering our country. And people, I mean, people intuitively know it's crazy, you know, that you allow anybody that wants to walk into a, you know, a bathroom, men to walk into a women's bathroom where they're, you know, girls, young girls and others. They know that's crazy. Everybody knows that's crazy. But they're compromised. They're personally compromised, and so they don't want to say anything about that because, well, you know, look, everybody's got their thing. Let judgment begin in the house of God first. We have to pursue holiness. God said, be holy, for I am holy. And that begins with us. Because if there's hypocrisy in our own lives and in the church, that simply gives those on the outside who want to promote this type of stuff to declare, you know, that we're hypocrites. Look, we shouldn't want anybody to live in the bondage that comes with, you know, pornography or any other addiction. It's devastating for individuals, and it is harmful for society. All right, folks, we're once again out of time. I'm sorry I didn't get to the rest of the phone calls today. Very good conversation. Tim, I do appreciate you calling and sharing your story with us because I think that helps people realize these are not just statistics. These are people. They're real lives. And Tim said at the age of 12, and that's exactly the age that most young people are first exposed to pornography. And he said, you know, he's been dealing with this for 8 years. He's 20 years old. And it has affected his marriage. It's affected his family. And fortunately, as he is now a believer, he's dealing with it. But it doesn't just go away. It's a struggle. And he's taking the steps to do it. And I applaud him for doing that. And if you need help, reach out. Reach out and get the help. Do not live in the guilt and the bondage that comes with this. All right, folks. Thanks so much for being with us. Great to have you along on this Wednesday afternoon. Let me again remind you, the website, TonyPerkins.com. A lot of resources up there for you, so be sure and check it out. If you want to ask me a question, send me a comment, do so, Tony@TonyPerkins.com. If you want to partner with FRC, making this program available to more, you can do that as well at the website, Tony Perkins. I leave you with this, the words of the Apostle Paul, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.